All right, folks, welcome back to the latest Mount West Wire football podcast. You know where we are. MWR.com is where our written content is. And if you want to check out the podcast, it's there as well. iTunes, TuneIn, Spreaker, anywhere you can find a podcast are there. Jeremy Moss here, of course. Matt Kennerly hanging out in the now pay-for-play state.
the first, possibly of many, the way things are going these days.
Potentially, it is a snowball happening quickly, just in time as winter's here, and I'm seeing snow in the mountains. So it's on its way, Matt. It's going to be here before we know it, right?
Well, in some respects, yeah.
We'll see it happen. So this is our Week 6 preview. We're getting into conference games, which means there's fewer and fewer. We have only 5 games this week. One game on Friday, which we'll gauge our excitement level for New Mexico versus San Jose State. But I'm fairly excited for that game because I think the Spartans are on the way up. I think you convinced me, Matt, to believe in Sparty, the West Coast Sparty. Mm-hmm. A little bit, right?
A little bit.
But they're playing New Mexico, so I meant to look this up. We'll get to it in a minute as we're going to chat about that pay-for-play stuff. When's the last time they've been a touchdown favorite against any FBS team? I need to maybe quickly research that, see if I can find it.
My best guess would be sometime in 2013, maybe 2014.
When David Fells is there, one of those years?
I would guess so, yeah.
Okay, that makes the most sense.
I mean, at a minimum, I would definitely say 2012.
Yeah, for sure. We'll get into all that, but here's what we're going to start out with. We're going to start with the pay-for-play because it's a hot topic. Don't be Doug Gottlieb because he's an idiot about what he's saying.
Don't be a lot of people.
Don't be a lot of people. Here's the thing. Well, there's a lot to talk about. We'll try to condense this because I could literally talk hours upon this because I'm very interested and intrigued by it. Because I think this stuff's kind of fun to chat about. Maybe I'm the only one. Do you care too much about this? Pique your interest, Matt, to discuss quite a bit?
It does. I mean, I haven't made a secret in the past about the fact that they should pay the players one way or another. And I think what most of the disagreements, at least for right now, come down to is just kind of misconstruing what this Fair Pay to Play Act actually does. But maybe more importantly, what it doesn't actually do.
That's true. There's a lot of... We'll get to a lot of things. I joke about Doug Gottlieb, who mentioned it's all tied to ratings in big programs, to a degree, for like money. However,
That's how it is now.
Yeah, yeah. I know, but his point was there's nothing toward the players. It's all about the brand. Which did he? I mean, I know you don't follow college hoops a ton. I'm pretty sure you've heard of this guy. What's his name? Zion Williamson.
I am a very, very, very casual basketball fan, and yes, I have heard of Zion Williamson.
Yeah. And so, I believe, wasn't the former president Barack Obama at one of his games to see him and not Duke? Or,
yes.
Lots of people paid money. There was a big sneaker deal and exploded. And it wasn't, yes, it was Duke, but it's added layer to, hey, you got Zion Williamson, who's also really, really, really good. And so, his thing about, oh, it's just a name, it's partially true. Because I read the awful announcing piece, they kind of ripped into him a bit. But it's like, there's a reason BYU, Texas, and like Notre Dame have their own like TV deals or TV networks, essentially. However, with BYU not doing so well at the moment, they may not get a better deal. Or Texas goes 0-12, who are they going to do? What are they going to do? Nothing. So, but the gist of the bill, we'll get to that. I don't need to sidetrack too much at the moment. California has passed a bill signed on LeBron James' HBO show. I forget what it's called, but the other day, Governor Newsom. The shop, okay. That's what I thought. That hurt something else. So he signed a bill, which is very simple, in my opinion, straightforward. And all right, so for the bill itself, as we're just getting into, here's the gist of it. It will allow players, high college, in any sport, to, if I'm correct about on this right, have an representation. Basically the Olympic model. So you'd have an agent representation. You're able to make money off your name, image, likeness. So if you see NIL, that's what that means. To whether it's sign an endorsement deal with, say, whatever, Puma, Nike, some local bakery, that car dealership down the road, it looks shady, but someone has money somehow because they like the football team. No money comes from the school at all, which also is interesting because I saw something the other day about it where, say if you're in the Pac-12 in California, the Pac-12 can't hire an athlete to be in a commercial for the Pac-12 and pay them. Mm-hmm. So basically, if someone has to give you burger money or money at a burger joint, whatever. It's basically you get money as an Olympic athlete to sponsor you in some way or another.
Yeah.
Nothing from the schools itself. And that's kind of the big misconception from coaches, ADs.
Fans.
A lot of people who either haven't read the bill or listened to like Scott Frost, as we were talking before. listening to like his press conference, like, well, we have this nice $155 million facility. People assume we have money. And he's like, well, we do. But if you pay one athlete, you have to pay every athlete, which is false as well.
See, and here's the thing. That, like, the problem with that line of thinking, like, you have to pay everybody, well, it's because these agreements are being dealt with on an individual level, it would be up to the individual to determine whether or not they need those extra streams of revenue. I mean, what it essentially does is it eliminates a lot of the ridiculous situations that we've seen in recent years. Like, if you remember the whole Cardale Jones situation, mm-hmm. for instance. Because, he got caught selling his autograph or something like
and
that?
Ohio State, Terrell Pryor, tattoo stuff, exchange, like, remember? Pryor, yeah, Terrell, those type of guys. Those guys at Ohio State.
Or, for instance, you know, I forget the guy's name, but the UCF kicker who left the team
YouTube channel.
Because they wouldn't let him monetize his YouTube channel.
Freaking YouTube. How is that a competitive advantage? It's his personality. It's him doing it. He just happens to be in the football team.
So, and to clarify this, and this is from Roger Sherman over at The Ringer, he had a very clear explanation of what it does and what it doesn't do. So, again, it's based in names, images, and likeness that student athletes, or maybe to just disregard that term, you know, college athletes, whatever you want to call them, they have control over what they want to do with those things now. So you mentioned the Olympic model. Mm-hmm. If they want to get sponsorships for that, you know, all of a sudden you wouldn't have a Jeremy Bloom situation anymore, yeah. where he couldn't play wide receiver for Colorado back in the day because he was an Olympic skier.
Or there was
getting paid to do that.
Yeah, that. Or more recently, like if you Olympics, like swimming, you had what's her name, Ledecky from Stanford.
Yeah.
One of the most, outside of Michael Phelps, probably the second most famous U.S. swimmer in the world. Mm-hmm. She went to Stanford to swim, which is a very good school to go do that. Only person on the Olympic team could make no money, can be sponsored by Speedo, TYR, or anybody like that because she's still in college. It's like, come on. It's like everybody else could. Not saying just because those people do doesn't mean she can't. Like one of those things, they're doing it, so why can't everybody? But she's very recognizable, and she couldn't even do that while in college, which is similar to like Jeremy Bloom in football. It's like, there's these athletes who gymnasts and stuff who just, oh, I'm not going to college. I'll just do this instead mm-hmm. and get money. But it's not hard to figure this out.
Yeah, and if you're a fan of, for instance, EA's NCAA football mm-hmm. series.
Oh, yeah. Read our pieces on it by Sean. He's been putting some stuff
out. Assuming that this is the first step towards more widespread change, this is the kind of step that's necessary for the company to be able to pay players to use their likeness and bring that series back.
And there'd be enough money. Here's the thing, too. It's like, with that game, I guarantee they wouldn't go out. Maybe if you're the cover guy or something, you could get more mm-hmm. money. But I'm just spitballing here, so obviously I have no clue of what it'd be. But I know a couple of guys who played, because Ed O'Bannon paid out money to guys in the game between a certain set of years. It depended mm-hmm. kind of what level of player you were, how many times you appeared in the game, I think, of like if you're a starter or not. I think there's some sort of calculation. I'm pretty safe to say if they were to give, they'll say the game comes back. Everybody gets a free game on the console of their choice. That's part of your deal, which would make so much sense, right? You get a game. Who knows mm-hmm. it'll be $80, $100 by then because whatever games cost in the future and add-ons. But I'm pretty sure EA would be fine giving every NCAA athlete on the game $2,000.
Something like that,
yeah. Like, it's not going to be, you're not going to get a six-figure deal for being a video game because that makes no business sense for EA, which is my next point. I chatted with Darren Revelle on Twitter. He goes back and forth, a million different people came back at me and others. It's like, well, what's going to stop a guy from a car dealership in Norman, Oklahoma, paying Jalen Hurts $3 million a year? Nothing. Also, is that a good business model to pay some dude $3 million to advertise your product? The market will set the rate itself, and there aren't going to be these people. Phil Knight's not going to pay every player in Oregon $1 million to sign autographs. What's his incentive to pay $55 million a year or $80 million a year for these guys to get to your school? But the market, they're business people as well. They're not dummies just going to pay money just to pay money.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the other thing is like these avenues, there is evidence to suggest that those kinds of things exist on the down low already.
Go read The Bagman from Stephen Godfrey
if
from a couple years ago.
If you don't believe me, exactly. Google Meet the Bagman and go read that article. And it's not to say that that is like a nationwide kind of thing, but there is clearly some incentive being offered under the table to some athletes.
I am privy to know that's happened to some athletes. So mm-hmm. it's not. Also, people are seeing like they just. And also, one very integral rule they put in there. Law. So say you are. Is UCLA an Adidas school? Is that right? I think.
UCLA, I was actually reading this article from the LA Times. They signed a deal last year. I think it was, what, $280 million. It was with either Adidas or Under Armour.
Okay,
I'm trying to remember which.
regardless of the company, let's say Nike, say you're not a Nike school and Nike wants to come sponsor the biggest athlete on your team, who in your, say, Adidas, Under Armour, whatever, that is against the rules. You cannot do that. So you can't have the one Nike kid with your team being sponsored by Adidas. That doesn't mean, I'm not sure on this, but it would make sense. Like, say Adidas wants to give a bump to this guy being a commercial on top of that, because your school's already within that brand. I'm assuming that's on the up and up and perfectly in line because your team's sponsored by Adidas, you get all the apparel. But hey, we want, it's like the coaching, that's how coaches' salaries work too. You get $100,000 for being an Under Armour guy or being a Nike guy. Why can't like some other guy get 50K or 10K just to be in a commercial or radio spot and your team's already that brand? That's fine too.
Well, and to that point, Bill Plaschke in the LA Times wrote an article, I think it was a couple of days ago now, with regards to something like that shoe deal that UCLA signed. When they sign those deals now, all of that money is going straight to the institution. It's going straight to the athletic department. And essentially, the reason why schools and the NCAA feel threatened by that is because that would no longer be the case. At least some percentage of that $280 million would be going toward directly to the athletes instead. So it's, in some sense, a flexibility for sponsors to be able to, redistribute the pie, as it were, as they see fit. And if you're a member school of the NCAA, that may not necessarily be a good thing for you, but I think that there is still going to be enough money to go around. Maybe they suppress coaching salaries as a result. Like, is there really any reason why Dabo Swinney should be making $9.5 million this year?
No. Well, if he can, okay, here, no, I shouldn't just say flat out no. If he can get it, I'm fine with it. But what's the difference for him, literally, 9.5 to 900? And also, the bonuses from these, I should, we should probably, I pulled up the database here, and from USA Today, they have the coaching, like, bonuses and stuff. They're not getting millions of dollars from Nike and Under Armour. They're getting maybe, at most, I would say in the high end 500K, at most. And so it comes from media appearances. It comes from, say, like if your games are broadcast on Learfield Radio, money comes from you for appearing on the weekly coaches show or IMG. That's where money comes from. But if it's like back to the example, are they going to pay millions and millions to each player or certain players? Like there's once a generational players, like say Vince Young, Tim Tebow, Matt Leinart, Reggie Bush, those type of guys. You know what I mean? Like national guys who would get huge deals, or Tua right now, stuff like that, or Trevor Lawrence at Clemson. Those guys probably could demand seven figures for a season. I think that'd probably be okay. Most people won't, and that's fine as well, because if you're the third string punter or backup quarterback or the second guard, you get what you get. That's how it works now in life, and essentially. But the amount, like getting back to like the money thing for like the coaches, oh darn, they get 10% less or whatever because Nike's going to spend 5 million. Say my Nike's budget is 5 million at school X right now per year for apparel, whatever. They're not going to go, I say that's all they can spend. They're like, we can't spend anymore. That's all we can do for this school. But hey, I see this player here, a player there, whether it's a guy with charisma, a funny guy who's outgoing, fairly popular, may not even be the best guy on the team. Okay, we'll give this school 4.8 million, but this guy gets like 20,000 for him. You know what I mean? Or 4 point, you know what I mean? Like maybe they may give this guy 20,000 that comes out of their budget, but the school is not, you know what I mean? It's just a small fraction of what goes to him compared to school. So there's that,
I mean, I
which
think
it's a concern a little bit, right? A little.
the most likely outcome for the vast majority of student athletes is maybe just a little bit of walking around money. And that was something that, some parents of athletes have noted, like, in a different LA Times call article rather. The father of a running back on the Bruins, Dimitri Felton, had said that this kind of change can help athletes cover expenses during parts of the year where they're out of school and don't receive any kind of stipend.
And aren't able to work because they're still in summer school, they're still training outside of getting, like during summer school, they probably get, if you're on scholarship, like say you're full ride scholarship for anything, athlete or otherwise, that probably includes just meals at the, if you live there on campus, which older kids do not, when you get a bit
And
like,
I can't recall if we've mentioned it explicitly on the podcast in the past, but you look at the case that people like Bryce Treggs had made in the past, over on Twitter. you know, the fact that in a lot of respects, and especially here in California, the cost of living is a lot higher than it is in a lot of places.
Yeah.
So they might need, I mean, you know, in some respects, you know, people might say that the cost of a scholarship is not enough, or is enough rather. But in a lot of cases, it's not, because it's expensive to live in a lot of places.
Yeah. COA is a good step in the right direction, obviously. But that also depends on your school and cost of living. That's filtered in there. But like, here's the thing, like a good example I gave. People talk, like we talk about sponsorships and money not going to the school but to players. But how many names are on buildings you see around every campus? People still like to see their names on buildings.
They are building a new student union at Fresno State, and the billionaires that own the Wonderful Company just put forth $10 million to have their name slapped on that building.
Yeah, people still like that, right? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe a little bit of that goes, like, it's like I said, you have a $10 million budget, 9.4 goes toward a building, 600,000 goes toward spread across. What if a donor, like, how amazing would this be? That person has so much money. They're so generous. They want to give back to the school. They want their name memorized there, or memorialized, sorry, forever on that building. Let's say there's 5,000 student athletes. Oh, I want to give $2,000 to every athlete on campus per semester, per year. That's still a good use of money, just because they want to support the program somewhere or the other. Because if you support the athletes that way, or in any way, or this, even this opportunity, you're still going to want to people come to this school or that school. So again, it's giving $2,000 per year to every athlete a ton of money. No, but it could make a difference when that's an extra 200 bucks a month almost. Mm-hmm. To be able to, oh, I could buy a plane ticket to go home, or a long train ride to get home here, or I can buy an extra pair. You know what I mean? Just small things. Like, that is a good thing as well. And so people are like, well, you're going to blow, schools are going to lose money. They might. NCAA is afraid of control. But one thing I specifically know about, or know how money works. Like, say you're, people are like, oh, Olympic athletes. What are they going to do? Well, like smaller, not like even big names like we mentioned a couple, like Jeremy Bloom or Ledecky, I mentioned swimmer. Like, in school, I've done this before. Went to college, I swam and played water polo. It's like, okay, whatever. Get a couple hundred bucks, couple thousand bucks. Great. For my time there. Not a ton. I've coached like little kids swimming throughout the summer because I was able to. Like, being able to use your name or likeness, even if you're not even a big-time athlete, like, you just want to teach kids private swim lessons and charge them 40 bucks an hour, which is probably what you could do. If you do that during the summer or during your off time, you have some sort of camp, whether it's a track camp, a swimming camp, gymnast type of camp, or personal lessons throughout the year, that can add up and be more than probably a lot of football players that aren't, like, the big-time guys. Like, if you're doing... Or piano, like, think of this. If you're a person who does some instrument at school, I guarantee they're giving lessons to high school or junior high kids in the area when they have time to charge whatever it is. There's ways for those type of athletes to make a good amount of money and in not a lot of time. It won't impact their grades, their commitment to their team, or just say it's just off-season type stuff where you make 40 bucks an hour and you do, what do you mean, during the summer you work basically a full-time job. You make thousands of dollars during the summer because, hey, I'm on the USC swim team and I can make money giving you a private lesson, teach your kid how to swim. Or I know the technique because I'm not an Olympic type athlete, but I'm on the USC team, swim team. I'm really good and I can help your high school kid do better to help them get a scholarship for them down the road. So there's a million different ways that the people complain about these minor athletes or basketball players. Like, oh, I have a basketball camp. I'm a good – I can teach – that's all sorts of things. Private lessons is going to be a big deal about this. You can have agent to help you out. And that's ways to make – it's not just these guys making hundreds of thousands of dollars. These guys sorry to ramble on, but you get my point. Like, private lessons for smaller athletes are a pretty big lucrative thing. And I've done that myself after I was done college for a couple years during the summers. So,
and, I mean, to – focus it more on the Mountain West in particular. Like, I don't really think that it's going to have a huge impact one way or the other.
Come on, I heard Vegas is going to spend as much money as possible to get everybody.
Like, come on, man. I don't think Tillman Fertitta is going to be shelling out cash to try and bring in the best players money can buy. I don't think that's how that's going to work. You know, I don't think that, you know, someone like a T. Boone Pickens, who, you know, if he hadn't passed away, would be bringing in, you know, players to Oklahoma State or anything like that.
Yeah.
I don't think that it's going to stop players from wanting to play for teams that win. You know, I think that players are still going to be more likely, for instance, to go to a Boise State than a Wyoming if they have the choice. And that's not a knock on Wyoming. It's just that, you know, Boise has the winning history. They have the program. They're clearly the class of the Group of Five and things like that. You know, maybe it entices some kind of hometown athletes to – to stay at home.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that's going to be a trend of any kind. And, you know, if you take a step back and look at the grand scheme of things, you know, just look at this here. How many teams reasonably have a chance at, like, a title or anything like that?
What, you mean conference teams, title or many, national title?
How many legitimate top 10 teams are there, really? Like, six or seven?
Yeah, because a bottom couple will rotate. Like, I did something for CFN the other day because Clemson's kind of sputtering but still playing well. You have, what, Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, LSU, Georgia.
It's not going to stop an Adrian Martinez from going to Nebraska instead of Fresno State.
Yeah.
Let's put it that way.
That's the point I make people, well, you're going to go to this school. It's like, you're not going to go to choose University of Charlotte over Duke because they're able to, you're a four-star guy, maybe not the best guy Duke has coming into your class, but you're going to be in the mix, play a decent amount of time. You can go to Charlotte, be the guy day one, start a ton, play every minute you want to because you're that good of a guy. Just because, say, some booster or some company, say, I'll give you a $20,000 every semester on campus to do commercials for me, and Duke, and you have no potential offer or anything from Duke. Now, the good players, it's like Gary Parrish says. If you ever listened to the Iron College Basketball Podcast, him and Matt Norlander have been doing a ton of this with the FBI stuff going on with the college hoops, and this a little bit too. If it's fair game for everybody, there's no more cheating. Like, I've seen people on Twitter, like prominent people, they'll find new ways to cheat. I'm like, how? Guys will pay $10 million a year. Okay, fine. They're going to make a dumb business decision to pay somebody $10 million a year and not get a return on their investment.
Nobody's going to be less likely to go to Alabama.
Yeah, or UAB. USC. Yeah. Or it's like, you're not, like I said, yeah, if you're going to go to USC, you're probably going to go to USC if that's a chance. I'm not going to say this is never going to happen because we both know never say absolute anything. But let's just say there's a guy who it's close between a Mountain West or P5 school, like say Fresno or Cal. It's like, well, maybe there's a better opportunity at Cal because of this. And it's still in the same area. They want to be in that part of the country within reasonable range of where that may be. But it's not going to change all that much. Like, there's going to be exceptions here and there, but you're not going to see an uber five-star guy go to some small school.
Yeah, pretty much.
So, should we note that Nevada's also in the mix for this as well? They're potentially signing a bill.
Nevada, South Carolina, Florida.
Illinois, New York.
Things might be happening pretty fast, and it's going to be interesting to see how it all unfolds.
Is a snowball upon us? Can we see it rolling downhill?
It might be.
So let me ask you this. How you see the Pac-12 come out? We're going to wrap up this really quick. Pac-12 has come out and said, we're against this. NCAA, we're against this. Why is Craig Thompson being quiet?
I mean, I think he's probably considering, you know, how the situation unfolds nationally before taking a stance one way or another. And, you know, from here, I don't have a problem with it.
Oh, me too. I'm just saying it's kind of odd. Like, I know Pac-12 probably had a pre-written statement ready to go, right?
I mean, I think it's, you know, just because they have a lot of stakeholders in far-flung places.
Well, so is Pac-12. Pac-12 only has four schools.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I get that.
That's all I'm getting. I'm just saying, like, it seems, I guess also, but you don't see the Big West or WCC, but they're also only basketball and baseball type schools.
Mm-hmm.
It's my opinion, I think, with them not saying anything, is that they're more in line and they're fine with it than not. That's my kind of gut feeling.
That wouldn't surprise me. And I mean, it's ironic that the Pac-12 came out so strongly against it because, among other people, Chip Kelly at UCLA has already come out in favor of it. So,
and one or two last things before we move on real quick to actual game stuff. But is the NCAA really going to play chicken with this?
Oh, they will.
With Cal, do you think? Like, here's what's
this is a billion-dollar industry. They are going to do whatever they can.
They got plenty of lobbyists out there to hang out. Here's what I honestly think is going to happen. Because they already said COA is not going to happen, never going to happen, never going to play athletes, nothing, never, ever. You're going to make a rule change because California is the biggest state. Do you really want to kick out USC and UCLA? Probably not.
Is Ohio State really not going to play in the Rose Bowl if USC wins the Pac-12
yeah,
this year?
Yeah, and Gene Smith is like, well, we're not going to play California schools. Or remember the fake comment about Jim Delaney saying, oh, we're going to drop to D3, and then under oath said that was a farce if they were COA? Yes. So it's like they're lying. They want to protect themselves. I get that because they want to control all the money. But here's the thing. NCAA is still going to make TV deals. Conferences are still going to make money off TV deals and apparel sales. Because like I said, you can't have a school sponsor a player. Like, oh, my name's on the jersey now at school. You still don't get money from that. Like, they're still going to sell number 7 Tebow, quote, Tebow jerseys like LeBron James did. Like, they're going to sell Ohio State jerseys of me if I went there. 23, the schools can't pay the players to do that, so that money still goes directly to the school. So you can't just slap names on jerseys now and make more money. You're still going to make the money. The schools are. Players aren't getting that money. So that's still going to be their own, same, similar revenue. maybe now, but if they're an Adidas, well, that may not stay. I don't want to get that because I don't know. But you know my point. Like, they're still gonna make their money. But here's what I think is gonna happen. 2023, California did a smart thing to give time to let this roll forward. However, other states are trying to push back 2020, and it's not every deal or proposed legislation is the same. Like, I think New York State wants to do what California does, plus 15% of school revenue, which I think is a mistake. I don't think that's going to happen. You're more likely to get the Olympic model where schools pay nothing to players and money just comes from outside sources. But it's going to come to a point they're going to fight. They're going to fight as much as they can. This will go to court for a long time. But if there's so many states that get into it, they're going to have to – they're not going to kick everybody out. Because I put on Twitter, are you going to have a North Dakota versus South Dakota basketball title game because you're stubborn NCAA?
I guess we'll see.
I think this is going to happen. I'm not sure – not sooner than later. But if enough states do it, are you going to kick out Texas, Oklahoma, Alabama from NCAA? No. They're going to adjust and adapt and have a bill. Because here's one thing, too. Tie it to grades. If you're not eligible, you don't get money. You know what I mean? Your value is being eligible at your university, right? If you're not eligible at USC or Texas or Oklahoma or Utah or Fresno or Boise or UNLV, it doesn't matter. They may still give you some cash, but you're less valuable to them to be not being eligible. So
there you go.
One question here. Okay. Get to, because it's on. I know we talked for a ton. I could go on for hours on this because it's fascinating to me. So I apologize if you're wanting the game, skip ahead. So we had a question from Fake Matt Mummy. In 3 years, will there be more states within the Mountain's footprint who have legalized sports gambling than pay for play? Because right now there's only Nevada, I want to say, and New Mexico you can do gambling, correct? Sports gambling.
I believe so.
So I would say, that's a tough one.
I think it's more likely that there is more pay to play.
I might go gambling. Because
I could see it unfolding either way.
The reason I see that pay for play will be caught in court for years.
That's true.
So that's what I'm getting at. Are we ready for games now, I guess, after we take an exhale and move on after
two? On that happy note, yeah, let's go into it.
Also, one last quick thing. If you go to bannersociety.com, there's a good FAQ as well as the Ringer does. So check those out for basics on the footnotes, I guess, of what's going on here. So not Fresno State, they're on a bye week. So San Jose State, I'm thinking of California schools. At the Spartans, Friday night, CBS Sports Network, 7 Pacific. Spartans are a 7-point home favorite. And I didn't look during our conversation, but I'm just going to go guess the David Fells years were the last time they had been a touchdown favorite.
I would think so.
Was, what, 13?
That was his last year, yeah.
Okay, I don't know how good they were in 14, but let's just say it's been at least 5 years. What do we make of this game? Because New Mexico has Bob Davie back again. Is this going to be the throwbows again? Because what Tuiata did last couple weeks of just chucking the ball and having a pretty good matchup? Because Liberty wasn't great. Offense kind of sputtered. But that's my big concern for the Lobos, because defense is good, but offense was fine. But the secondary couldn't stop anybody.
Yeah, I mean, it's been kind of interesting to take a step back and look at the big picture of what New Mexico's been able to do so far this year. Just because in a lot of respects, it has really been all or nothing.
Mm-hmm.
In the same way that you might expect from like an academy team, at least when it comes to throwing the football. Speaking of Tuioti in particular, you know, he's only thrown 67 passes across three games this year. So just in terms of a lot of other quarterbacks in the conference, they aren't throwing as much as, for instance, like Cole McDonald or Jordan Love. You know, those guys are throwing at 38, 40 times a game. He only has a 50% completion rate, 50.7. But among quarterbacks with at least 50 pass attempts, he is number one in the conference as far as yards per attempt, which really comes back to that, you know, explosiveness that we've seen from them at times this year. But that explosiveness has been like really, really hit or miss, obviously. And like when it's working, they can get huge chunks of play at a time. And when it's not working, then the offense is basically kind of dead in the water. Because Amari Davis has been fine, but I wouldn't necessarily say that, you know, running the football has been a strength of theirs.
True, it's not what it has been.
Not quite. Like, they've done a really good job of keeping Tuioti upright, too, just in terms of sack rate. Like, they're fifth nationally. They've allowed sacks on only 1.8% of dropbacks. So I think if you're maybe looking for a place where this game can turn one way or the other, is San Jose State going to be able to get pressure on Tuioti, force him to roll out of the pocket, force him to potentially make mistakes in the same way that they were able to a couple weeks ago against Nick Starkle in Arkansas? That's kind of a big if, because while New Mexico has been, again, very good at protecting the quarterback, that has not been much better for San Jose State so far this year. You know, their own sack rate on defense is still 120th nationally. Ooh. And 2.9% overall. And it doesn't really get much better on obvious passing downs either. So, you know, one, can San Jose State get pressure? And two, if they can't, is New Mexico going to be in a position where they can, you know, complete those big passes down the field? Or if they don't, then it can be kind of a it could easily be the kind of game that breaks it down into a standstill at best for the Lobos, or at worst that San Jose State gets back to picking off passes left and right if Tuioti's not careful with the football.
Yeah, with him completing, like last week, real quick, is just under 50% versus Liberty, a couple of picks. Week before, he did much better. But I think Josh Love's going to have a pretty big game and why they're going to win this one for Spartans and cover, I think, as well. Because Calvert last week, I don't think he was their main starting quarterback, and he torched Lobos for 300 yards and 2 touchdowns.
Mm-hmm.
And so if Josh Love can find like Billy Gaither, tight end, or somebody downfield, I think that's why Spartans are going to win, because Love is a pretty good quarterback in the conference. You know, the Lobos defense isn't great. And you're right. I think, like, look at the running game, what they've done. Like, if you look at last week, I know, like, Amari Davis is pretty good. He had only that one big run last week at 30-plus yards on routes about 99. So if you limit those big plays that Lobos can have on the ground, but I would be more comfortable, like you were saying, get Tuioti uncomfortable and also force Lobos to maybe run more than they pass.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think, like, New Mexico is going to just abandon one or the other. They're going to keep wanting to throw. But like, you're right, he's barely at 50% this year. And even for his career, really quick, like, last year he had 24 less attempts, and right now he's a little bit better at 55%. Not great. Year mm-hmm. before, 57 of 118. So he's been, his career average is basically 50%. Oh, and by the way, on the road, he's under 47% on the road. So,
yeah. I mean, I think the same kind of holds true the other way around too, because we've seen kind of mixed results from the Spartans when they don't have a running game. And that was one of those really significant things that, you know, really bit them last week in their loss against Air Force, was they just couldn't move the ball at all on the ground.
Yeah.
So I think they need a better game, a bigger game from Dijon Packer or Tyler Nevins or whoever ends up with most of the work. But, you know, at least if you look at those same numbers as far as the ground game is concerned, that's kind of anybody's guess as to how that's going to go, because, you know, they haven't really been good in short yardage situations. They're 117th nationally by power success rate, which is, you know, when you got to move the chains with, you know, 1 or 2 yards to go, how often are you doing it? They're only doing it 50% of the time, you know, and they're 118th in opportunity rate, which is basically just how often are you getting 5 yards at a time? And that's something that New Mexico hasn't really been great about defending. Like, they have been pretty good, surprisingly good in short yardage situations. They're 9th on defense in power success rate, but they are only 122nd in opportunity rate on defense. So if San Jose State can get themselves in a situation where they're setting up 2nd and 5 or 2nd and 4, giving themselves, you know, better opportunities to lean on the strength of their offense, which is throwing the football, being able to take shots down the field on 2nd down, for instance, and then if they can't connect, then at least giving them more manageable 3rd downs. That, I think, is, you know, that's definitely going to be a path that favors the Spartans if they can do that. But again, that's kind of a big if, because if New Mexico can stand up in the same way that they did for at least some stretches last week against Liberty, that kind of throws the whole thing up into the air.
All right, so let's get to our picks here, predictions here.
Okay.
It's a 7-point line as of recording. So if that changes, don't shoot us or anything. That's what's going on our pick post, line 7. Over-under is a fairly high 64.5, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going San Jose, or actually, oh, I already mentioned I'm picking. Really quick, Number Fire predicts 12-point victory for Spartans. Team Rankings, 13-point victory, or excuse me, 7-point victory. I can't read today.
So by contrast, Bill Connolly's SP Plus metric has San Jose State by 9.8
mm-hmm.
with a 71% win probability. Brian Fremo's FEI which measures...
Is that updated finally?
It is updated.
Okay.
They also favor the Spartans, but only by 3.3.
Ooh. What are you going with then?
I like the Spartans.
Okay. Both are...
And I like the Spartans to cover.
Ooh.
What is it, 7.5?
Seven.
Seven. No, I could roll with that. I'm going to say San Jose State 31, New Mexico 20.
We're almost the same pick. I go 34-23 San Jose State.
Great minds think alike.
Yeah, I think there'll be some points scored in this game by both teams because we're not kidding ourselves. San Jose State's not great, and neither is New Mexico, and so we'll see. All right, next game. Ooh, we got a big one here. Utah State at LSU. Breakfast football, Matt, on SEC Network. 9 a.m. Pacific, 10 Mountain Time, 11 Central Time. It's like, geez, that's a... I guess they can't be too drunk at the point at that moment down in Death Valley getting ready for the game. Unless you really want to try to do so, it could be done, but just saying. It's not the late afternoon to get things going. So I've had some back and forth on people. The line on this game is still 28 points.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me why that's not too high, or why that is too high. I think it's way too high.
Would you prefer the short answer or the long answer?
Whatever answer you are comfortable giving.
Oh, okay, well, I'll give you both. Okay. I'll preface the long answer with the short answer.
So
the short
really
answer is
long
that,
answer?
I mean, the short answer is that LSU is really, really good.
Oh, yeah, they're really good, yes.
And just by virtue of the different metrics that they have out there, like the only teams that have been better than them so far this year is, at least in terms of like points per drive, for instance, which is something that FEI is based in part on. They're third in the country behind just Alabama and Ohio State in terms of just yards per drive, or not yards per drive, points per drive. I think they're like top five by SP Plus. I'm not totally sure off the top of my head. You know, this is not the kind of team that might have been a tad overrated in years past.
Not this team.
They have torched pretty much everybody that they have faced this year. Whether that's a pretty decent Texas team that might have been oversold as a top 10 team, but is definitely like a top 20 team nationally. They beat the crap out of them. They beat the crap out of a pretty good Georgia Southern team. Took them a little while to get going against their FCS opponent, but they ended up winning that game by like 42 points. And to me, I think that all starts with Joe Burrow.
Yeah, he's really good.
He has been amazing this year.
He can throw the ball well. He can move the ball well. He is the reason, like, typically, going back to, I guess, DeMarcus Russell, they typically don't have a good quarterback. It's defense running the ball like they did with Leonard Fournette. And probably another back I'm missing here or there, but they've always had guys on defense and run the ball, and they'll score maybe 30 points here and there and just kind of muscle you to get the win, to get victories. They've never had, wasn't Matt Mock the dentist, the quarterback or something in dental school down there in Baton Rouge for a while, a couple years ago?
I believe so.
His name sounds familiar. So it's like, if a dentist being quarterback at LSU, it's like, really? I guess if you can hand the ball off, you're good to go?
I mean, it's not like passer rating is the most effective measure of a quarterback's worth.
Yeah.
But I think it is worth noting that he's number two in the country in that regard. The only guy with a better QB rating is Jalen Hurts out there at Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you just go down the line. Burrow is completing 80% of his passes. He has 17 touchdowns, 12.3 yards per attempt. And it's not like they aren't asking him to do nothing. Like, he's throwing the ball a lot more than a lot of the other top quarterbacks in the country. He's averaging 35 throws a game. So, to me, I think that we've seen enough of Utah State's secondary to see that they were shaky against Wake Forest, and they've cleaned it up a little bit. But LSU is not Wake Forest. This is the best team that they have faced in a long, long, long time. So I think that the spread, whether you are getting it at 27.5 or 28, doesn't really say as much about the Aggies as it does about this particular LSU team.
You're right on that. Like, here's the thing, like, look at the pure numbers. Like, I know I'm not looking at the advanced stuff at the moment, but like yardage, yards per play, defensive points allowed, they're fairly similar.
Mm-hmm.
The big difference is that points per game, which is a 20-point difference right now. But part of it too, Jordan Love is doing fine this year. How many drives have they been in the red zone and coughed it up? like Wake Forest, Colorado State, there's fumbles, there's this, there's that, where they, if they play like that, this 28 points is going to be obliterated into by the third quarter. And so,
and to that point, you know, we just talked about, you know, points per drive that LSU had being third overall in the country. Utah State's at 60.
Yeah.
So they are basically, it's basically been like a wash on offense versus defense as far as net points per drive. Mm-hmm. I would say that nationally they have been better at defending than they have at finishing those opportunities. Because if you look at like what, you know, they break it down by like short fields, by midfields, by in long drives. And I think it's been telling that when you look at like the middle of the field or like mid-range drives, which is defined as beginning from its own 20 to its own 40. On offense, Utah State is only 76th. And when they've been given a short field, they're only 120th as far as being able to turn that into points. And against a team like LSU, you know, a lot of that, I think, in the early going has come back to Jordan Love and his turnovers. And if he throws an errant pass or two in this game, you know, we know that the Tigers have big names in that secondary, like Grant Delpit, Christian Fulton, and things like that. If he loses the turnover battle for the Aggies, this is a game that could go sideways in a hurry.
True. One thing I was going to mention, well, I was thinking of the coaches because you had like Dave Aranda there for LSU. He was the defensive coordinator, right, for Utah State years ago?
Yes.
Okay. I was going to say something dumb about that, but I was like, oh, if he's off with the coach, maybe they won't want to push it to him. But I think Utah, here's the thing too, like, you look at who LSU's played. They haven't really played, like I mentioned, like Texas, they beat them by 7. They scored a lot of points against them. Texas is fine. Like, I would bet, like, Utah State's better than Georgia Southern, whoever NW State is, and I'm pretty sure they're slightly better than Vanderbilt. This, I don't think it's far-fetched to say perhaps Utah State defense might be better than Texas's defense or in the same neighborhood, possibly. And so, mm-hmm. I don't know, but they still scored 45 points against that Texas team, who was still pretty good. And so, my point is, I think Utah State's defense will have to show up to David Woodward, Tippa, or somebody to make some plays and get short fields. So, because you said the point per drive isn't great. If they can go, I'd rather Utah State go 25 yards and 85 yards for a potential score. I think there'll be points. This is going to be closer than the outcome predicts, I think. Because I don't think it'll be 28 points. Like, could I see 3 touchdowns? Probably. But I think it'll be a game where LSU just, it's just not going to be the Wisconsin game where it comes down to a field goal. It's LSU team probably going to make the playoffs, I think, and they're that good. But I still think Utah State can keep it under 20 points.
I mean, I think that one thing that the Aggies absolutely have to do if they want to survive in this game is they've got to get to Joe Burrow. They've got to make plays on early downs, especially.
Exactly.
And, you know, if you just look at their defense, you know, we know that they have playmakers on that front. But as far as, you know, team defense, they're only 89th nationally in sack rate. You know, they've only taken down the quarterback on 5.6% of dropbacks. And there hasn't really been any splits in that regard. Like they're 88th on standard downs and 80th on passing downs. Mm-hmm. But that's something that if you're looking for any kind of hindrance that LSU has had so far this year on standard downs, which let me give you the definition real quick. So it's first down, second and 7 or fewer, third and 4 or fewer, or fourth and 4 or fewer. In those situations, you know, when LSU's drop back to pass on offense, they are 99th.
Ooh.
So they get up a sack 6.4% of the time. That's going to be huge for someone like Tippa Galliai going up against really good offensive line, or, you know, the other guys on that defensive front, Devin Anderson, David Woodward, whoever they choose to throw pressure at Burrow in that offense. I think it's ultimately going to be easier said than done, but I think that's something that they have to do, especially when you take a step back and see that in all third down situations, LSU's converting 54% of the time on offense.
All right, so what did the SP Plus and FEI say for this one?
You may not be surprised that they both like LSU. SP Plus favors the Tigers by 21.5. They give them an 89% win probability. FEI's in mostly the same neighborhood. They favor LSU by 23.2.
So what's your pick?
I hate to say it, but I think it's going to be a long morning for Utah State fans, who may be compelled to drink a little bit watching this game. I'm going to take LSU minus 28. I'm going to say 49-21.
That's exactly
49-20. I just realized that as soon as I said it.
LSU 49, Utah State 20. I am a little more optimistic. It's still fairly convincing to win, but I'm going LSU 35, Utah State 20.
All right, then.
So I think they'll get some points. Offense is too good to be completely like shut out of this game. And so I think they'll find plays. And also, remember, Savon Scarver, pretty good kick returner as well. He had to kick last week 100 yards, but technically like 108. So
that's a fair point.
So there, I think there'll be some points, but it'll be a long afternoon, like you said. But I think they'll be in it for at least a little while, I think. Next game. San Diego State at Colorado State. So Rams are a 7.5-point home underdog to the Aztecs. ESPN2. Hey, when's the last time Aztecs been on ESPN2? It's been a while. Welcome aboard.
Seems like it, yeah.
I missed a game here, but we're going to keep going because I messed up. My ESPN scheduler is weird, but we'll go with this game as well. 7 p.m. Pacific time. What are the Aztecs going to do to stop Patrick O'Brien?
That's a good question.
Because we don't know a ton about him
this,
yet.
This game is really intriguing because it seems to me that a lot of the weaknesses for both of these teams tend to align with one another. Like we both know that Colorado State's struggled to defend the run, for instance, struggled to defend much of anything, actually. but San Diego State has had some trouble, you know, maintaining some consistency on offense. And, you know, for the season, they've been well above average in a lot of respects. It's just, I don't know. Like, we've seen them struggle to run the ball, and that really shows up in both the traditional measures and the advanced measures. You know, they're a very, very uncharacteristic 106th in opportunity rate. They're 109th in power success rate. So while that's not something that Colorado State's been very good at defending, it kind of goes back to what we were talking about earlier about, you know, New Mexico and San Jose State. You know, something is going to give in that regard. It's just going to be a matter of which team will be able to assert itself more with the things that it's been having trouble with in the early going this year.
True. And it's like, also, is this like a must-win game for Mike Bobo?
I think it's a must-win game for both teams.
Well, I mean, for his job, I would say, more specifically.
Yes, I do.
So by that logic, if he loses, could he be fired?
I mean, I don't know if that's likely to happen right away.
Okay.
I just think that it makes his seat very hot.
Okay, no, I agree.
I'll just leave it at that.
I like O'Brien because if you have Dante Bright, you have Nate Craig Myers, Warren Jackson, they have the offense here to challenge Aztecs' defense. And Kinsey's looks like he's going to play. I believe Warren Jackson's going to be back as well and be fine. But I think if the Rams are going to win, O'Brien needs to do it a couple weeks ago where he threw for, 300-plus yards. Like, they're going to need that and Kinsey to have a really good game, but I don't know if they can do it against his defense. Because also, Utah State game, they were unlucky in a couple regards as well. Like, you probably mentioned, like, the forward progress call. Is that forward progress or not when they strip the ball and everything? But it's... I don't know. I think they're going to have to play... Here's my thing. Rams are going to play like an 85% game to win. Aztecs can probably play like a 60% level game and still win.
Maybe. I would disagree with your earlier assessment, though, that Patrick O'Brien is going to be able to make plays against this defense. If only because when you look at the body of work that they've been able to put forth so far, this has been the best secondary in the conference. You know, they're number one by opponent's passer rating. They've only allowed two touchdowns. They picked off three passes. They're number one in yards per attempt. So even though opponents have been able to complete 65% of their passes so far, they haven't really been able to do much with that. And so I think, you know, we know that the strength of Colorado State is on offense, but we just saw this same Aztecs team frustrate Utah State more often than not a couple weeks ago. So I think it's mostly an easier said than done type of situation when it comes to Colorado State being able to assert itself against this secondary in particular.
So what do you think about, like, for the, like, Aztec side? The Rams defense is pretty bad.
Yeah, that's underselling it, but continue.
I'm just saying, like, that's why I'm thinking, like, a 60% game. Like, have you heard any update on Juwan Washington being completely healthy? Because it's been pretty quiet, from what I can tell.
I have not.
But they've had other guys who've been fine running the ball back there, whether it's, you know, I mean, Jasmine or somebody else, or maybe Agnew wheeling off a couple yards here and there because of he can move his feet. I'm wondering, well, I'm not wondering, but I think that's what I'm saying. The Aztecs, they can run the ball well, going up against the Rams defense that can, like, even Utah State, they're within 10 points, but they're coming big plays. Like, they can't tackle. Like, I can go back to special teams play where it's not defense, but it's still, you have defenders out there trying to tackle and do things like that. Like, Ryan Agnew might have a decent time running or throwing the ball, or may not, but, like, rushing defense, Rams are last in the conference in touchdowns and yards per attempt as well. Mm-hmm. So, like, they're giving up almost 6 yards a carry. So run the ball twice, you get a first down. That's what that says there, if you're math inclined or don't want to do the math. Like, passing defense as well, they are better, but I'm going to say part of that is because teams are going to run the ball against you instead.
Well, and that's what I'm saying. It's kind of a big if, because San Diego State's been really uneven about running the ball. So I don't necessarily think that that's a given. I mean, I'm more inclined to think that Ryan Agnew is going to have to lead the way.
You think so? Why is that? They can't just run the ball, I don't think?
I just feel like when you look at his body of work, like, when he plays well, the offense has just generally performed better. You know, you compare what he did against Weber State and Utah State, for instance, to what he was able to do on the road at UCLA and at New Mexico State. Mm-hmm. You know, at least in terms of, like, completion percentage, for instance. You know, the latter two were his two best games of the year. You know, and he was able to connect on some big plays against the Bruins in particular. So I think they just need him to show that he can move the chains on occasion to keep the Rams from keying on that ground game, whether it's Washington or Jordan Bird or Chance Bell, whoever ends up getting the majority of the opportunities. I think as Agnew goes, the Aztecs are going to go in this game. And if he's off, you know, same as last week, I don't think it's necessarily going to unfold the same way that it did against Utah State, but I think it's going to end up being a lot closer than a lot of Aztecs fans might believe it could be.
I think it could as well, because the Rams were in the game for a while. The fourth quarter wasn't ideal for them, but it wasn't a blowout. Like, let's just say that turnover, the strip fumble for that Woodward got, doesn't go their way. They call the play dead. So, mm-hmm. Like, who knows what happens? It's only a 10-point game, and it was back and forth. And so Aztecs, I'm going to say, are not quite as good as Utah State. I think that's fair to say. And they are at home, so that's a plus as well for the Rams. I'm still going to pick San Diego State, but I would not be overly. I'd be a little surprised if they win. But, like, again, if you look at the talent on offense, I think the Rams have a much better offense than at San Diego State. If Washington doesn't play, they're the best running back on the field. They clearly have the best receivers on the field. Patrick O'Brien seems to be throwing better than Ryan Agnew ever has. And it's partially a scheme and partially what they want to do. And remember, one of the Aztecs receivers out with a broken hand for a while. One of the best receivers. And so, offense-wise, like, they're going to have to go up against clearly the great defense from San Diego State. But I think there will be more points. Like, over under 52, I think it's going to blow past that. I think it'll be, like, 60-ish range. But I'm still going to go Aztecs to win, but it's going to be pretty close. I'll just give you my prediction. Now, maybe I need to change it here because I thought more points would be scored. I'm going to adjust mine real quick, Matt. I'm going to go 31-20 San Diego State.
Okay, so SP Plus favors the Aztecs by 7.
Okay. And
they give them a 66% win probability. FEI also favors San Diego State by a little bit more, actually, by 15.7.
Ooh, 15.7. Okay, that's quite a bit. So what do you got then? What do you
say? I think that this game, like a lot of other games, likely to go down the stretch for the Aztecs. Yeah, their most convincing wins are going to come by the fact or by their ability to shore up their shortcomings, because I don't think that their strengths are in question. I think if they're unable to get a consistent passing game going, I think if they continue to struggle with the run game, then it's going to be closer than a lot of people expect. I'm kind of splitting the difference between these two projections, so I would take the Aztecs -7.5. I'm going to say 21-13.
Okay, you're not as many points. I think there could be some more points, assuming that CSU offense can get past the Aztec defense there. So, but this is one worth watching. I think this is going to be some intrigue in this game because the Rams offense versus the Aztec defense.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to Boise State versus UNLV. Oh, boy. Boise State's last trip to Sam Boyd Stadium. 16th-ranked Boise State. It's a 7:30 Pacific kick on CBS Sports Network. So if Boise fans get the CBS SN like the two times a year you need to get to it to find the channel. Oh, one thing I want to mention real quick. That prior game, did you see tickets are $51?
I did not know that.
That's expensive.
It is.
For a Rams Aztecs game, but just saying. I guess you got to pay for that new stadium somehow, right?
Exactly.
So the Boise State, ooh, the line changed. I may make a call here because when I saw the line early in the week, it was 28.5. It's currently 23.
Interesting.
What should we do here?
People must have bet Boise up super hard.
Yeah. We'll go with 23, I guess. I will adjust our sheet here that I'm going to post later and adjust people's picks. Here's the thing. 23, 20.5 didn't matter. People are taking Boise to cruise to the victory from our guys. So my biggest thing in the game, honestly, Charles Williams' health. How the heck is the offense going to go for UNLV? And honestly, like, Desiree Reed, whatever her name is, sorry, the UNLV AD, is like, oh, it's ridiculous when asked about Sanchez's job. If there's another blowout, if Wyoming can score 50 over 50 points on you, what is Boise going to do?
Well, and that doesn't even take into account the fact that Boise State might have some of their key starters coming back for this game.
Yeah.
Kind of up in the air still, last I checked. But DeAndre Pierce and John Ojukwu could be back in action.
Be helpful.
And, you know, if this Boise State team is that much closer to full strength, then...
Yeah.
That's all I got to say.
Kate,
I mean, I don't know what else you can really say.
There's nothing about the game. It's like if UNLV is going to hang around, they need Rodgers to not throw the ball a ton, move with his legs, get Williams the ball and have him. Because I think Boise defense, they could be run on a little bit. Like, there could be yards gained on the ground. But I don't think it'd be enough, whatever Charles Williams, whatever back or Rodgers combination can do. They might get some here and there, but I don't think there'll be enough to make a difference to say that's how they're going to win if Charles Williams goes for, say he even goes for like 15 for 210 and two touchdowns. That's still not going to be enough.
Mm-hmm.
Because like when you look at Boise's rush defense, like it's average. Like it's above average, just under 4 yards per carry. So let's say it goes to 5, 5.5. Okay, that's still not going to be enough. They've only allowed 3 rushing touchdowns as well. But my biggest thing is, like, if this is a blowout, like, Sanchez might be gone after this game. Like, we look at the Arkansas State game, that was brutal. Last game got crushed by a Wyoming team who has no quarterback, in my opinion, Sean Chambers. He's not doing very well besides on the ground. Like, this is, like, regressing drastically for Rebels football. I don't know if he survives this game. If it's, like, 60-10, are they just going to give him the hook right there and then?
I have no idea.
You don't,
I mean, they seem pretty set on not doing that, though.
It's, I only got a new AD. Make your mark. Just do it. You got to make a move. I don't know. It's not looking good. That's the easy way to put it, right?
Yeah.
So, like, see, real
quick. It seems really hard to talk about this game just because it seems so preordained.
That's why I'm talking about the other
Maybe
stuff.
Maybe more so than a lot of other games we've talked about all season long.
So really quick, CBS Sports, they've been doing their updating power hot seat rankings, and this is Dennis Dodd does it. They had the most recent one out. Sanchez is a winner be fired. He is currently, I'm not sure how the order is, if it's alphabetical or not. I think it's actually, no, there's only two coaches who are on a 5. Mm-hmm. You want to guess who the other coach's winner be fired is? That's not Tony Sanchez.
Let me think. I got to think of really bad teams out there.
No, it's not a bad team.
Well, it's not a bad team.
You know who it is. Come on. You're going to hit yourself if you don't get it.
Just tell me. I'm not
Clay Helton.
Oh, well, yeah. That makes a lot of sense.
He's still at a 5, even after beating Utah. But Sanchez, they both went up from a 4 to a 5 from last week. So both these coaches have increased their odds of being fired. So, like, Sanchez, he's 17-35, 1-3 this year. Part of it, too, he mentions, like, the new stadium. It's like, we kind of mentioned the pay-for-play stuff. There's probably going to be money in Vegas to get some guys in town or to entice guys to come in after a couple years of what they can earn. But still, guys want to play and play well and be on a program to go to the NFL potentially if that's your ultimate goal. So I'm pretty sure they don't want to have a coach who has a, let's say he's 19 and 38. Do you know what I mean? He wins two more games the rest of the year, has only 19 wins. Mm-hmm. Do you want that coach who lost as many, double the games he's won?
Good question.
That's what I'm thinking. Like, I used to think it was Bob Davie being gone, even though I still think he shouldn't be around for more than football reasons. But I'm not saying he's going to be gone after the Boise game, but there is, you can't say never, because what if they somehow miraculously win the rest of their games? But they're gonna be looking for a new coach by Thanksgiving. At the latest. Okay. Latest.
So let's play devil's advocate real quick then.
Okay. Try your best.
How does UNLV upset Boise State?
Charles Williams.
That simple, huh?
I think so. He, like I said, he's a really, really good running back. Charles Williams. Well, okay, I'll give more than that, clearly, but Williams running well. Like I said, Rodgers limited his throwing attempts by allowing him to move the pocket and run himself, and then hit Hank Bachmeier, because that's been Boise's weakness, getting to him and hit him and knock him around. Can the UNLV front seven do that? That's kind of what they need to do to get in his face, to cause disruption, maybe get an easy turnover, short field. But it's going to take a lot. It's basically UNLV is going to have to play their best game of the year and hope Boise makes mistakes, and even then it might be close, or will be close, either for UNLV to be in the game.
They're going to need big plays.
And they can do that. They made big plays.
The biggest plays they can get, whether it's from Williams, whether it's from, you know, whoever else is in that backfield, you know, Darren Williams or Tyree mm-hmm. Jackson or whomever. Because if you're looking for any kind of silver lining whatsoever, you know, you can see in the numbers that UNLV does have at least a slight advantage as far as opportunity rate is concerned. Like, being 75th on offense doesn't really sound that impressive. But when you look at what Boise State's been able to do on defense by that regard, they're 117th nationally as far as giving up running plays that basically gain more than 5 yards,
yeah,
is what it is. So when the offensive line is able to do its job against this Broncos front, and I think that I wish I had the splits for the first half to the second half, because based on what we've seen from the Broncos this season so far, it makes me think that most of that metric comes down to success the teams have had in the first half.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if UNLV is going to get ahead, they've got to do it like as soon as possible, because they basically need a home run play or two.
So what's your prediction?
Ooh, okay. So before I give the prediction, let me give the projections real quick. SP Plus favors the Broncos by 18.6 with an 86% win probability. And FEI, they like Boise State by 27.9.
Just under. Oh, no, that's over 23 now, yeah.
Don't think twice about taking the Broncos minus 23. Don't do it.
So what do you got?
I said 38-10.
So you're more confident in this game than Utah State game covering?
Yes. No, actually, I'm reasonably confident about both of those games. LSU is going to cover. Boise's going to cover. I think they're both going to do it pretty easily.
So you said Boise State 38. UNLV had how many? 10?
10.
Okay. All right, so really quick. I'm looking at ESPN matchup predictor, the FPI. Between Utah State and LSU and Boise State UNLV, we know who the loser or projected team's not to win. UNLV is on the short end, as is Utah State. What team do you think is given a better chance against their respective opponent?
Utah State, probably?
No.
Really?
FPI gives UNLV a 6.7%. Utah State was like 4%.
They clearly haven't watched UNLV play football recently, then.
The computers need to open their eyes bigger.
Yeah.
This game. All right. The final game of the day. Not the final game.
Wait. Did you give your prediction?
Oh, 41-13 Boise State.
There you go.
So I guess I have to change my against the spread here to pick Boise State. So I had to adjust that here. Final game, which is not a final game because I don't have... The reason this aired, Matt, because on ESPN you can pick your favorite teams. So I pick all the Mountain West teams so I get the alerts and stuff. I never picked the Air Force, so they're always at the bottom. It's like, hey, you don't care about them, apparently. So that game's actually 1:30 Mountain Time. It's on the East Coast in Annapolis. Take on Navy for the first leg of the Commander-in-Chief, CBS Sports Network. Air Force is a road 3.5-point favorite. And Matt, is Air Force going to be weird and put Isaiah Sanders in for like the first two plays and switch out Hammond the rest of the time?
I mean, I imagine a lot of that would depend on Hammond's health, because he got nicked up a little bit last week against San Jose State, which was really the only reason that Sanders saw any playing time, I think.
No, he started too. Sanders got the
first. Oh, he did?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. He got the first snap.
I don't know why I thought Hammond started.
No, I was looking on Twitter because I didn't have the game up on my computer at work yet, and I saw, Brett Brigham from Colorado Springs Gazette mentioned Sanders gets the first start, gets the first snap.
Oh.
So
well, there you go.
I don't think it matters in this game because I don't think Navy's as good as it used to be the past couple years.
You don't think so?
Last week they played, they're better than last year, but they haven't been as good as
they used to be. That was going to be my first question. Is Navy back? Question mark?
I don't know, because they beat a bad East Carolina team. They beat, who's HC? What team is that? Holy Cross. But then they're better than last year, but I don't think they're great because they hung with Memphis and were even at the half, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
Or leading at the half 20-14. I'd say they're better than they used to be, but I don't say they're back. They're throwing a bit more than they used to. So, and let me get this name out of the way. Kinoni Cordell Makakua? Question mark? Does that sound about right? Kionai?
We'll go with that.
Kionai Cordell. Can I call him KKM? Is that good?
Yeah, that works.
He had 8 for 101 rushing last week. We know what they are. Like, if you're following us or know, if you're following Air Force, you know what Navy does. Same offense as Air Force, essentially. Fullback dive, triple option. They are looking to throw a bit more this year than the past. And Memphis is a pretty good team, too. So it's not like, Memphis, whatever. And they all held them to 35 points, which is fairly respectable for what Memphis offense has done this year. And they're undefeated Memphis team. They're not ranked, but they're getting votes and pretty close. And I think it could be health. Like I say, it doesn't matter if it's Sanders or Hammond. I'd prefer Hammond, but if there's either quarterback banged up, it's not good for Air Force. But again, the drop-off between the two, I guess the only issue is throwing a little bit, because I think Hammond's a touch better thrower than Sanders.
I mean, I think that we talked about this a little bit in our Falcons preview over the summer. I don't think that there's really that much difference. And last year, Sanders was the better passer between the two.
Oh, last year he was? Okay, my mistake.
I mean, I just don't think that there's any drop-off at all, regardless of whoever's under center for them.
Maybe it's my personal preference, I guess. I don't know. It's like I said, it's very little Fenny, so that's what I'm like.
See, here is what has really driven Navy's rebound so far this year. And maybe some of that comes down to the schedule has been kind of a little dicey so far. But in a lot of respects, they have gotten a lot better on defense. Because last year, they were giving up over 6 yards per play. This year, they've shaved at least a yard per play off of that figure. Mm. And, they have guys who have, shown an ability to be a little bit disruptive. They've got a guy in Jacob Springer at linebacker who's, I think he's leading the team with 3.5 tackles for loss. They've got 4 different defenders, including some names you may remember, like Nazair or Cromartie,
mm-hmm.
who have at least 2.5 tackles for loss so far in the early going. So they've been disruptive, and that shows up in the advanced numbers, too. Like, on defense, they have kind of a catch-all for offensive and defensive line play, and it's called adjusted line yards. So I'm just going to throw the definition out there because I don't think I've talked about it before. Essentially, the line gets credit for rushing yards between 0 and 3 yards, and then they get 50% of the credit for yards 4 through 8. And then anything beyond that is a highlight yard, so the credit goes to running backs for that regard.
Mm-hmm.
So what it ultimately comes down to is this metric called line yards per carry. And when you look at what Air Force and Navy have been able to do so far this year, both of those teams have been really, really good in that respect. Air Force is 23rd nationally. They're giving up 2.05 line yards per carry. The midshipmen, however, are 4th nationally. And when you just go down the line and you look at the different situational stats, they're 17th in opportunity rate allowed. They're 4th in passing down line yards. So they've just been really, really good against the run in particular. And they have, perked up a little bit when it comes to rushing the passer, too. Like, on passing downs especially, they're 7th nationally in passing down success rate. They're 14th nationally, with a 10.3% sack rate just on all passes. So I don't necessarily think it's going to be a cakewalk for Air Force in that regard. Navy's a lot improved, and maybe the stats are skewed a little bit because of the opposition. but I still don't think that's a team that you can take lightly at this point.
No, you shouldn't. They're better than last year, and usually when these teams play, it's usually fairly close. I remember a couple years ago when they had Keenan Reynolds, that back and forth game. That was amazing. It's like one of the best games I've ever seen. It's like almost 100 total points, I think, when Air Force, I think they went touchdown for touchdown in the second half for every single possession, and it just came up as short because that first half it was a little bit behind. But like Air Force has won 30 of 50 of these games. Like last year was a blowout, which is an anomaly. What was last year's score here?
I think it was 35-7.
Yeah, 35-7. But before that, it's like 48-45, 28-14, 33-11. Fairly convincing. A couple here and there, but it's usually within two touchdowns for the most part. Mm-hmm. Going back to like 2003, there's been only about four games, I think, that's been by 10 or more points, maybe five.
Yeah.
So it's pretty close. And with Navy on the way back, it's going to be, I think this is going to be a close game. Like the line, I'm in agreement with Air Force being a small favorite in this game because they have two quarterbacks. They have Jordan Jackson defense and other players as well. But I do think Air Force defense needs to step up a little bit because Navy seems to have their guys back in place. And if Navy throws a lot more, that's going to be in Air Force's favor, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think that obviously these two teams are going to do a lot of similar things on both sides of the ball.
2-hour game.
And so it's just, to me, it's just a matter of who does those little things just a little bit better. Because we talked about, you know, adjusted line yards per carry on defense. But Navy has improved upon what they did last year on offense as well. In that regard, they're a top 30 team on, you know, as far as being able to run the ball. And that bears itself out just in terms of regular yards per carry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, last year they were a shade under 5, and now they're right around 5.3. Air Force, however, has had an even bigger improvement from what they were last year. Last year, I think they were 31st by adjusted line yards per carry. Right now, they're 2nd.
Interesting.
And so they've just been extremely efficient, and they've gotten a lot more explosiveness than we've become accustomed to on offense as well. Like they're 8th on opportunity rate on offense, so they're getting those 5-yard carries that they weren't always getting week in and week out last year. So there's a huge difference in how this game might unfold. You know, I look at opportunity rate in particular, where, you know, Air Force is top 10 and Navy is top 40, but it may only take those one or two opportunities where the midshipmen are getting maybe 3 or 4 yards per carry instead of 5 or 6. Maybe that sets up like a less manageable third down situation where they have to throw the football. And in that case, that enables Air Force's defense to really tee off. And that's something that they've been a little better about than Navy as far as just being able to bring pressure on the quarterback. So it's just like those little things.
I'd say one of the
could make all the difference.
Yes, I see one of the kind of, I mentioned the passing, like playing Holy Cross, fine. East Carolina is not very good. They were very well. But the Memphis team where they had to throw it, maybe it's kind of, it was partly because they had to come back because they're trailing that fourth quarter a little bit, second half. They're only 6-13. And it was their worst yards per attempt, the only pick of the year. So if they can be, if Air Force can get out to some sort of lead, like say 12 plus points, almost 2 touchdowns, 10 or more, and force Navy to throw, that's kind of an area they need to, they can capitalize, I think, because Air Force has players. We know they have all the guys returning back. Memphis defense, it's fine. They held Air Force or Navy to a reasonable amount of yards on the ground. Nothing outrageous, but nothing, not stingy by any stretch either. Yeah. But if Air Force gets out for a bit, and if they can force a couple, like I said, those longer plays, second and long, third and long, outside of those typical standard downs, I think that's how Air Force might be able to tip it their favor a little bit, where they may make their convert, or the third down percentage is a little bit less for Navy than Air Force, mm-hmm. and get more opportunities on that. So I think that's how it'll turn out. But I'm still going with Air Force. So let me look at real quick the team rankings, as well as number of fire. We both have our things here we look at here. So number of fire has 29-21. Both have Air Force. 34-24 pick for team ranking. Oh, no, sorry. I'm looking at this wrong. I apologize. They put it weirdly. They don't put up and down. They put it sideways. So sorry. 24-21 team rankings. I was like, that's a big victory. 35-29 number of fire. So basically within that 3 to 5 point range, my particular pick on this game is Air Force 28, Navy 20.
So SB Plus favors the Falcons by only 1.3 points. They only give them a 53% win probability in this game. And conversely, FEI likes Navy.
Ooh.
They favor the Middies by 4.
Interesting. What do you got?
It's going to be a really fun game.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to take the Falcons but it's going to be real close. I'm going to say Falcons 28, Middies 27.
Ooh, 1 point game there.
It's, yeah, what? Yeah, it's going to be the most entertaining game of the weekend.
You think so?
Yes.
I think you're right, yeah. New Mexico and San Jose State might be close, but I don't know the entertainment value would be there compared to that one. All right, we went a long time for five games. Congrats to us, I guess, right?
That's how we do.
That's what we do. So check us out, website mwr.com, of all of our preview predictions. We're going to start sneaking in some basketball content, so if you're listening to this, want some hoops, there'll be a little bit here and there. But we'll be back sometime Sunday to recap and go through all of these games, and Matt, we'll see if Tony Sanchez is head coach Sunday afternoon. All right, we will see you then. Chat about the rest of the games, folks.